Hey guys, welcome to 2020 and welcome to the 11th season of Interviews with the Haunting Masters. I want to run something by you. I've been considering now for a couple of seasons to change the name of Interviews with the Haunting Masters. Not the format, not what we do or how we do it, but just change the name to Days in the Wild to match my old TV show and my guide services, Days in the Wild Outfitters, just so it's all concise, and for one. And number two, I got feedback that, you know, over the years that people think my, the title of the show is a little pretentious, like, oh, you know, this guy thinks he's a haunting master. And lastly, because Interviews with the Haunting Masters is quite long and a little hard to market, Days in the Wild is a little bit easier. And again, like it's like I said, it matches everything else. So, like to hear what you think. Like to hear from all the fans and all the guys that have been, guys and girls that have been listening to the podcast, and you know what you think, if I should change the name or not. So I'm gonna put up a little survey page on johnstallone.me, and I'd love to hear back from you. So without further ado, we're gonna roll into this next episode, and it's brought to you by Phoenix Shooting Bags. Thanks. Hi, welcome to the Interviews with the Haunting Masters, brought to you by Phoenix Shooting Bags. Today we're gonna talk about the Arizona Elk Draw. And I got Travis McClendon on with us, some zero guide fees. And we're going to discuss the ins and outs here and hopefully answer any questions you guys got. What's going on, Travis?
How you guys doing?
Good, man. Can't complain. Getting ready to leave tomorrow morning at 3 a.m. heading down south to Tucson. Got some friends coming in that I'm going to help out, go after some coos and javelina. So.
Nice.
Yeah. So this should be a good time. I'm not loving this full moon. definitely affecting things, man. I noticed in the last couple of days, it's an early rising moon too. It's rising at like what was like 2:30, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And I just noticed everything was bedding down way faster. Hell. Was it yesterday or the day before? Day before, I was glassing stuff up like right at dawn, like honestly dark still, you know, not even legal shooting light, glassing stuff up. And then right after that, everything was laying down already. And right. I was like, holy shit. And then things got up around 9 o'clock in the morning again and started moving around, but...
Yeah, I think with the deer, it definitely, I think people play to the elk, but I don't think, in my experience, the elk doesn't affect them nearly as much as it does the deer. The deer, for sure, the moon phase and the cold weather affects the rut with the mule deer. Arizona, it gets cold all the time during that rut, and those elk don't do any differently if it was 100 degrees outside. So
yeah, you know, like I feel like if it is a full moon and it's super hot, you do get all, you know, you just get more rutting activity going on at night. So in the morning, just not as vocal, but they're still up and doing what they do. They're such big animals; they need to eat constantly, you know.
Yep, exactly.
So they can't afford to be laying down all the time, and so.
Matter how long they do it, right? And
you
have a higher percentage of harvesting something the longer they rut and they're up. And so that's what you're looking for, is like that, just to stay up longer during the mornings and get up earlier in the evenings.
Yeah, there's a giant fallacy out there that weather controls the onset of the rut, and it's like, it drives me insane.
I agree, especially in Arizona.
Yeah, I mean, if you thought that in Mother Nature's infinite wisdom, that she would rely on something as unpredictable as the weather to, you know, propagate a herd, you know, it's just ridiculous in my opinion. I've been following that. I got heavy involved in it with the whitetail stuff back east, and, you know, guys talking about the moon and this and that. And then, you know, looking into photo periodism, because that's what you know, brings on the rut. It's the shortening of days. You know, there's a
right.
There's a gland basically that, you know, so many hours of sunlight in the eyeball, you know, triggers this gland to you know, start the rut, basically start the estrous cycle, which of course right. starts the rut. Anyway, without that biology lesson, So, let's do a deep dive into the Arizona draw system. You know, I've been playing the game here. I've been living here now 29 years. And, you know, I feel like I got a good grasp on things, but I always feel like I'm missing something. And I know there's guys that, you know, like yourself that just study it in and out because it's part of your business, you know.
Right.
Let's start with the point system and what that does for you, you know, what a point means for you.
Okay. Sure. So I'm going to give generalities because guys, when I talk about the point system, they're like, well, technically it's this, technically it's that. So you get, I don't want to over confuse it. I've called the game Fish. I've talked to him a lot about this because obviously we have a membership-based program where we apply all of our members. So it's very important when I'm talking to people that they understand how it works. So these are just general concepts. So the guy listening that doesn't maybe live in Arizona gets an idea of how it works. So basically point system, they give, as we know, 10% goes to 5% will go to non-residents. Another 5% will go to non-residents typically in the random. So you have 5% in the max, 5% in the random. The rest of those tags are going to go to residents in the max and random. So when we talk about in terms of bonus points, max points, and then random points. So that's kind of how I want to break it down and how I talk to my guys. And if you have any questions in between this, John, let me know.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Just stop me. But basically what we have is they call it the pass, but I call it the max because it just makes more sense. Like whoever has the highest number of points is going to go into a 20% pool of the overall tag allocation. So if we say unit 9 has 100 tags, 20 of those tags are going to go to the guys with the highest number of points. And that's going to be the max pass or the bonus, what they call the bonus pass. But that's essentially the guys with the highest number of points putting in for that area. Now, in terms of non-residents, they always say, okay, well, I have so many points. How does this help me? Well, 10% of those tags typically go to guys that are non-residents. Mm-hmm. So when we break it down, out of that 10%, 5% are going to go to guys with the highest number of points that are non-resident. The other 5% of those non-resident tags are going to go into the random. And guys, here's the difference. Guys don't know what the bonus points, how they help you. So a lot of guys thinks in terms of it's just another raffle tag in the hat or another name in the hat, and it's really not done that way. The way it's done is if you don't have max, you're going to be put in the random automatically, and each bonus point gives you another chance to get a lower number. So the state does this: they run the numbers and they sign the applications a random number. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 1 through 1,000,000. Let's just say 1 through 1,000,000. Whoever gets the lowest number assigned to their application will get the tag. That's how the random works. Now, how do bonus points help you? So if I had 7 bonus points, now the computer realizes that, and it's going to spit me out 7 random numbers. The lowest random number out of those 7 chances is what I go in to the draw with. So I always go into the draw with 1 number. The bonus points just help you try to get a lower number as you can.
Right.
So that's how it works. Then once your number comes up, they're going to open up your application and they're going to look at your first choice. If there's no tags available, they're going to look automatically at your second choice. If there's no tags available, then you go back into the drawing and you got to get redrawn with another number for your third, fourth, and fifth choice.
Right.
So that's how it works for non-residents. If you're trying, you know, and I'm talking to non-residents because most residents know how that works, but a lot of non-residents don't.
You'd be surprised. You'd be surprised how many.
Yeah. Maybe there's not a lot. Yeah. Maybe guys don't know, but even if you're a resident, so that random tag I drew several guys this year, never even applied before, that drew randomly. So you just can get lucky, and every year you can get drawn. You have the potential to draw every single year, and a lot of people don't know that because you could draw one of those random tags. And if we're talking in terms of 100 tags, once the non-residents are done, there's still going to be about 75 to 80 tags. You're going to get to be able to random tag as a resident to try to draw one of those. So that's how it works in the random, and most people do have random. The guys that have the most bonus points that puts you into that max pass or that bonus pass, that you have your own drawing. 20% of the tags go into your own drawing, and you'll draw those tags, and only guys with the highest number of points for that unit and for that species will be able to have a chance to draw those tags for the max.
So, long story short, right there is it's always worth putting in whether you have points or not, because you always have a mathematical chance of drawing.
That's correct. And so I talk to a lot of guys. They're like, well, I'm just doing bonus points until I build up enough where I can get drawn. And I'm like, well, you're doing yourself a disservice because they changed that, what, 3 or 4 years ago now, that the non-residents do have a chance to draw in the random drawing. So as a non-resident, you need to be applying every single year because there is a possibility of drawing.
One, you brought up the whole lottery thing, or raffle thing, sticking your hand in a hat. So I do like that analogy, and just to clarify what you said, if you have 5 bonus points and I have the numbers 1 through 100 in this hat, I basically could take out, I'm taking out five tickets out of that hat, and the lowest number out of that 5 tickets, 1 through 100, is, say I drew number 5, number 50, and number 20, and whatever. So number 5 would be my lowest number. That would be my draw number.
That's your draw
If
number. Yep.
you didn't catch the way Travis put it, that I for me that's kind of the way I've always described it to people. And I feel like it's simple, stupid that way.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people think it's like Nevada, they score your points. So if you had 10 points, now you have 100 points, and that is essentially 100 names in the hat, like 100 raffle tickets. People think that Arizona is the same way. It's not. You're going in with one number. Now, the bonus points help you get a lower number, but every application only gets assigned one number, just like you said. And one other thing that's kind of, excluding the strip, the Arizona strip, 13A and 13B, because there's so many non-residents across the country that have max points. Besides that, typically on your archery, elk, and a lot of your rifle hunts, once you get to max as a non-resident, and even as a resident, once you get in that max, you have a lot of these units, you have 100% chance to draw because there's only so few of you. So if there's 20 tags, but there's only 10 guys with max points, everybody's going to get a tag. What happens, though, one of the things that I'd like to share that I see this a lot is, the guys don't may not realize, is you get your first two choices before you get kicked back in the draw. So a lot of times guys will put a second choice that puts them into the bonus pass. And if that happens, then you have no chance of drawing your first choice if your second choice puts you into a max category, and you're going to get, because they do the bonus pass first. So it's going to pull you into that bonus pass as a second choice. And a lot of guys I talk to don't realize that. So they have no chance of drawing that first choice because the second choice puts them into that bonus pass where they're going to get the tag.
See, I didn't realize that back a few years ago, and I kind of, not, I didn't want to say screwed myself, but because, I put it as my second choice, I was happy to get the tag, but I didn't realize like that I was definitely going to draw that second tag and not going to get the first one when I didn't.
Right.
So.
And a lot of guys don't, and that's what happens, is they're like, well, I'm going to do this first choice, this second choice, and the first choice one doesn't put them in a bonus pass, but the second choice does. So you might as well not even put the first one. So keep that in mind for all the guys that are out there. You really want to keep that in mind, especially if you want to give yourself actually two choices. You'd want to go put two choices that don't put you in the bonus pass.
They need to be a similar caliber hunt, basically.
Yes, exactly. Similar caliber.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Now, if you want to do that with the third choice, you could do that with the third choice and no problem. But it's the first and second one, right?
Yes, and I just like to tell guys, too, you know, if your first two choices are taken, all the tags are taken, and you get put back into the drawing, typically the good hunts, by the time you get redrawn for the third, fourth, and fifth choice, typically all the good caliber hunts are gone.
Yeah.
So the way I do it, because Arizona is known as a trophy state, a lot of my non-resident applications, I don't even do a third choice because there's nothing that we're going to want to try to draw on a third, fourth, or fifth choice for my guys. So I only just tell them, hey, give me your first two choices because those are the ones really going to count.
Right. Right. So all that being said, I realized this a couple years ago that there's hunts that, for instance, like a late season archery elk hunt that are, you know, 5 point, let's say 4 points, 5 points to draw as a resident that non-residents can draw with one or no points. And that's because, like what you were saying earlier, is there's the pool, even though there's, let's say there's 10 tags in that unit, there's only, you know, five people from out of state putting in for those because it's not a desired hunt.
Right.
It's not when, so this is the way I kind of described it, and maybe you can elaborate on it better, but I've told guys, well, when guys want to come to Arizona, they want the rut experience. They want to, you know, if they get drawn to Arizona, they want to come for what Arizona's known for, you know, big bulls and unit ones and tens and nines and whatever and 23s. And they're not really putting in for those hunts that are, B team, C team hunts, you know.
Right.
So those other hunts, which are, I think, are great opportunity hunts if you just want to come and hunt. You know, I myself had that late season tag a couple times and done very well with it. But you know, those are hunts that you might be able to draw, you know.
Well, I tier them. So there's tier three, tier two, tier one, and I give a block of units for each tier. And you're exactly right. I mean, you'd be surprised how many guys are like, oh, I'd love to shoot a 340 plus type bull. And I ask them where you're applying, and they're like, oh, 9 and 10. I'm like, well, there's a lot of nice units in Arizona that you can get drawn in half the time that'll produce 350-type bulls. And when they find that out, they're like, okay, well, you know, let's do that. So a lot of guys don't know, because that's all they hear in the magazine on social, you know, is the 23s, the 9s, the 10s, the 1s. But and it forces everybody into those units because there are big elk there. But there's also big elk in a lot of units in Arizona that are in the Tier 3s. And the tier twos. So, and those you're going to draw sooner rather than later on. And so that's kind of what we do with the application service that I have. And just like living in Arizona my whole life is, you know, we know the numbers, we know, you know, average wait times for guys that are trying to apply and what size of bulls you're going to be able to hunt. So, you know, it might be worth it to hunt two times or three times in Arizona in a tier three or tier two unit compared to waiting all the time for just to hunt one time in a tier one unit. Right. Everybody's different, but
I mean, I'm like this with deer too. Like Arizona is one of those places. I feel like you could pretty much freaking throw a dart. Now the hunting experience might be different, but you could pretty much throw a dart in the fact that you can find a, you know, 350, hell, you could find a 400 bull in any freaking unit in Arizona, in my opinion.
Correct.
If you did the work. But, you know, it's whether you're, you know, what experience do you want? You know, what are we looking at for, you know, bugling is concerned and like that kind of stuff is what changes. So trophy quality, it's not, I don't know, it's not really like a measurement, I feel like, that like it is in other states, like where, you know, if you go to like Wyoming, if you don't go hunting, up by the park, you're not going to see 400 inch bulls or even, you know, 350, 360 bulls, whatever.
Right.
So Arizona, Nevada, Utah, like there's a lot of good bulls in every unit, I think.
You know? Yeah, exactly. And a lot of guys don't realize that because they don't know and they've only heard of the premier units. So yeah, with my membership, as I have a whole gamut of guys, and I put them from tier ones down to tier threes. And once I tell them, hey, there's, you can shoot nice 350, you can hunt 350 type bulls, but in these certain units, and you're less than 10 years to apply, there's a lot less competition, you have a better chance randomly because of that, then they're on board. They're like, oh shoot, we didn't know that. Didn't know about those units. So, you know, there's a benefit to having inside knowledge by living in the state for sure and doing what we do.
Yeah.
But you're right. As far as the overall experience, every unit has a different experience. I mean, 9 and 10 are always the top, and 9 and 10 archery experience are going to be night and day different. I mean, 9, there's a ton of 340 to 360 type bulls, lots of bugling. They come out of the park in the res. They're way more callable, and the success rate's usually around 60% on the archery hunt, if not higher.
Crazy.
And you go over to unit 10, higher caliber bull, in my opinion, more 370 plus bulls, but they're harder to call. They're spread out more, and you've got, you know, a success rate of 30 to 35%. Both really good units, but your hunting experience is going to be a lot different between those two units. Based on those elk are smarter in 10. They're not as many coming off the park or the res, and they know the gig. They know what's up. And so that, you know, that calling and bugling experience is going to be a little different in 10, and that's why that success rate is much lower. But in my opinion, unit 10 has better bulls over the 370 mark than unit 9. So for me, that's what I'm going after. So I'll be okay with the 30% because I feel like I can beat those odds and right. try to find something over 370.
Right, exactly. So real quick, because I got another question for you, but just while you were talking about 9 and 10, what is the max pull on 9 right now?
I believe I want to say it's 22. I haven't looked at this year. I want to say 21 or 22 points for the archery is going to be max. I mean, 9's got a history of being so good that everybody, you know, that has max points puts in for it.
And that's out of state?
That's out of state. I think 14 is the residence. Up until this past year, it was 14.
Wow, there's a shit ton of points, man. I don't know if I go 14 years. That's my biggest problem. Like, I start getting around 5 points, and I'm like, yo, I need to go elk hunting.
Right, I need to hunt. Yeah, exactly.
It gets crazy. I can't, you know. I try to, you know, fill the need by going to other states and whatnot, but it's, man.
Not working?
Yeah. Oh, it's not, man. I just got back up to 6 points that I put in for a late season rifle tag right now with my wife.
Okay. Yeah. Gotcha. Well, it's hunting. You get to go out there and, you right. know, to each his own. I gave my tag to my daughter, which you can do, by the way, for those that are listening, up until age 18, you can give your tag to your kids or your grandkids. And so I gave my last tag to my daughter and watched her shoot a bull. And that was amazing.
Awesome.
And then also, just so guys know that you can also get a bonus point, and that's by putting in 5 straight years without missing. You get that loyalty point, they call it. And then also, as you know, taking the Hunter Ed gives you a point that you can never lose for every species. So you typically, you need 12 to get into, you need 12 bonus points if you're going to get to max, because that'll give you 14.
Right.
So you need 12 years if you go all the way to max. But remember the random, people. You can draw on the random.
Right, exactly. Well, I think, honestly, if I don't draw this year with Maria, I'm going to continue to shoot for the stars, I guess, and go for, you know, unit 9 or something like that.
Yeah.
Because, I don't know, there's a couple other units that I like that I think I could do real well in, too. But, I guess let's talk about that a little bit. Which units in Arizona do you feel are managed for opportunity, and which ones are managed for trophy?
Definitely, I think okay, the way I'd break it down is like, what's the best tier three unit that there is in Arizona, which means what's the biggest elk you could kill with the best odds of drawing a tier three unit? And I would say like 4A, 4B, those are going to be opportunity hunts, but they're better than just opportunity hunts. In my opinion, I think 4A, 4B has come along the last couple of years. There's a lot of elk there and they're easy to get drawn. 7 East is a really easy one to get drawn. It's not great right now, but it's easy to get drawn. It's not the best.
They ruined that unit, man. That unit used to be.
Yes, they're ruining it. Yes, they just have hunt after hunt in there right now, and it's easy to draw, but bad experience in my opinion. But hey, if you want to give it a shot, you can. 6A, 6B. You know, the 6A, a lot of elk, a lot of tags out there to be given out. And 6A produces some big elk. But typically, you know, that's a good hunt if you want to go to get a tag and go kill a nice 6-point. I mean, you're going to see 300 to 350 type bulls, even bigger in there. Like you said, there's a 400-inch bull in every unit on a decent antler growth year. So, right. So that's another one. You know, you always got your 5B North and 5B South. Those have been good. I think South is probably a little better than the North right now. But those are my tier three block of units. And I say the best tier three out of all those right now is probably, in my opinion, the easiest one to get drawn with the best opportunity to big elk would be 4A and 4B.
Yeah. I got a buddy that's like, that's his jam. That's his unit he puts in for that all the time. And I know why, because he gets into bulls every year.
Yeah.
And that he gets drawn every year. You know, he doesn't get drawn every year, but, yeah, it's a great area, especially if you spend some time.
Yeah, spend some time in there. And that's, you know, for those guys who just want to get drawn and go hunt, that's where I try to do it at. You know, the tier two units, I think the best tier two unit right now that you can draw sooner rather than later and have a good chance at a good bull would be unit eight. Mm-hmm. The hunting experience isn't great. Like you said, it's a small area and probably too many tags, but those tags give guys opportunity to draw. So, you know, I think unit eight right now is a really good spot where you could go kill and they got some really good bulls in unit eight, and it's not that hard to draw compared to a 9-10 or, you know, 1-3-3C. So unit eight's a good one. I would also say, you know, in that same category, 27, it would be in that category, in 7 West is probably a tier two unit. And the reason I say they're tier two, it's not that the caliber of a bull is less than a 9 and 10. There's just not as many of them. And they also have cow hunts at the same time.
Right. So the experience is not as good.
The experience is not as good. And, you know, right now I think max for a non-resident, again, 7 West is 14 points. Unit eight is around 9 or 10. So if you're looking to kind of up your game a little bit and, you know, it's a little harder to draw, but the caliber of bull is going to be a little better. I think, you know, unit eight, 7 West, unit eight, 27, even maybe one. They give out 300 tags in one, but there's a lot of elk. One's probably 15 to 16 points to draw. So those are my like tier two units. And like I said, the reason I call them a tier two is because they have a lot of cow hunts at the same time, which, you know, makes your hunting experience worse.
Right. Right. More guys around with hoochie mamas.
Oh yeah, you know, you're on a herd of elk and you've got three cow hunters, you know, that are on the same herd. And unit eight, you know, they have a lot of cows. The cow to bull ratio's up there, so you know there could be a herd of, you know, 30 elk with two herd bulls in there, but a lot of cows. And you know, you come around the corner and there's, you know, two guys trying to stalk them for cows. So that's kind of what you got in there. But it's also easier to draw, and you do see some really good bulls in unit eight on a good antler growth year. So you know, pick your poison on that. But, you know, it's like I said, at 10 points, max 10 is a heck of a lot better than max 22, like you're in unit 9.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's so, and that's, and, you know, that's my tier ones, you know, 23 North, 23 South, you know, 383C, unit 9, 10. Those units don't have cow hunts. 383C does, but the other units don't have any cow hunts at the same time. So those are not, that's nice because you're just dealing with bull guys. There's less tags, harder to draw, but better hunting experience.
Right. There's 22. What's your thoughts on 22? 22 used to be like one of those awesome units, and they seem to have managed to
wipe it out. I hate 22.
Yeah,
north and south. I just guys call me. They expect that it's gonna, especially on the early rifle hunts. They're like, oh, this is a great tag, right? And I'm like, depends what you're after. Oh, yeah, you know, we want 350 plus and 22. That's tough.
Right.
It's tough to come by. Way too many late rifle tags. They kill a lot of those young bulls before they give them a chance to get an age class. Is there some big bulls in there? Sure. Just like you said, there is in every unit. But I'm not a big fan of 22. I didn't even bring it up. But, you know, there's guys that are probably going to say, whatever, Travis, you don't know what you're talking about. And maybe I don't. But I'm not a big fan of 22, but hey, if you want to tag and you want to go get drawn and mess with all the other yahoos, then yeah, put in for it. It's an easier draw in the archery for sure. It's a tier three unit for me.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I agree. I just wanted to see what you thought your thought process was on it. So let's switch gears a little bit. I draw a tag. Where do you start your efforts looking for a place to hunt within the unit that you drew?
A DIY?
Yeah.
You know, Go Hunt's a great resource. I think if I had never been there and I want to know all the history about it, elevations, weather patterns, terrain, tag allocation, what to expect, I think Go Hunt has a really nice website to get all that information, become a member with them, and they do a lot of good research. So I would definitely start there. I'd get a flatline map. Most of the flatline maps now they do every unit in Arizona, or most of them. And they, you know, flatline maps, they do a good job having the topos, having the roads, having, you know, water resources. That would be a good start. And then I would, you know, you can call the Game and Fish. I mean, they have some decent information. Call your friends, and, you know, call around and then get out there and go look around, you know, spend some time driving. Go out there and actually set foot in the unit and go to the places that you've been recommended to, you know, get an overall feel of how you want to hunt. Because a lot of these units will go like 6A, unit 8. I mean, unit 8 goes down to probably around 3,500 feet, but also can go up to 7,000. So there's a big elevation in there where you want to hunt, depending on your capabilities and where you're finding the elk.
Do the elk go all the way down to 3,000?
Oh, yeah, there's elk right down on that river all summer long.
Yeah, I've never been over there, actually, so I didn't know if they would go down there or not.
Well, it's about like 3,500 to 4,000 right there. And, oh, yeah, they definitely, like, especially during the rut, they'll come off that mountain and push those cows down. And the cows actually stay right. I've seen several, 40, 50 head of cow down there in the wintertime, and they stay there. And you'll see a lot of rubs down there. It's just there's just niches of elk spread out through there. But yeah, they definitely are down there.
Cool. Good to know. All right. Well, I think that's all I got for you as far as the draw is concerned, unless you could think of something else.
Well, that's where I'd start. I mean, and that would give you a good landing. A lot of guys call the outfitters and say, hey, give me some spots. I might book with you.
I get that all the time. All the time, you know, guys call and they ask questions, and I'm like, you know, they're not going to book with you, but
right.
You know, you give them a little heads up where to, you know, what to start looking for. I'm a guy that's like, I learned a long time ago. If you know, it's kind of like that old Bible, you know, teach a man a fish and you know, he'll eat for life, and if you give a man a fish, he'll eat for a day type scenario. So
right.
I just kind of give them the information to help them, you know, get on the right path, but, you know, instead of giving them a spot to go to.
Right.
Yeah. So, if you got time, could you share with us one of your favorite elk hunting stories?
Sure. Let me think a little bit. Yeah, I got one. So, I had taken this guy out in New Mexico twice, and I'm not going to mention his name because I'm going to make fun of him a little bit. So I'm guiding this guy, and he smokes. He's a big smoker. He was well out of shape. And every time we started hiking, he'd unbutton his shirt and his big old belly would stick out. So, and he was loud. And we hunted twice in New Mexico. You can buy the landowner tags. This was when I was guiding over there, and he didn't kill anything. And his lifelong goal was to kill a buck bull. And a lot of guys are like that. It's hard to kill a buck bull because you're gonna kill it. You gotta kill something around 390, 400 for it in the net where it books. So he drew an Arizona tag, and this was in 15. This was where was this at? This was an 18A, 18A. So that's a, you know, that's a block of units, what they call the multi-units, and they give you multi-units to hunt because it's limited opportunity, which means there's not a lot of elk there. And so he had drew an early rifle 18A tag, and he came into camp. The first we saw a really big bull, about a 370, 375 bull. I wanted to show him the opening morning. Some hunter was in there and ran him out of there. Next day we went back in the same area and I found a big 6x6, but he had a broken fifth all the way down to the main beam, and he really didn't want to take that bull because we knew it wasn't going to book. And so I kept going back to that same area just because I know that other bull was there that we had seen the day before. And so we went back 4 days in a row, never saw that elk, kept seeing that broken bull every single day. And this is an area that has hardly any elk, so it's hard to find elk in this area, and there's just not many of them. So we went a couple other places, never saw another elk. So day six of the hunt, he had a 7 day hunt. And so day six, he's like, you know what, let's go find that bull that with the broken fifth, and that'll be a great bull. I'll get the point fixed, and we'll go from there. And I'm like, all right. So morning of the six, we drive in there, and of course we get up there, and of course it's the only day he wasn't there. It was the day we wanted to shoot him,
Of course.
of course. So we were pretty bummed. I was really bummed because, you know, we hadn't seen any other elk. And so he was gone out of this canyon. So we came back. It was probably 10 o'clock, and I drive back into camp, and I'm getting out of my truck, and I look up on the hill about 1,000 yards away, and there's this yellow dot right above camp. So I throw up my binos real quick, and as soon as I throw my binos up, this elk lays down. So I can't tell what it is other than I can see eye guards sticking out from below the cedar tree that he was sitting by. And I'm like, crap, man, what are the chances of seeing this bull out of camp? There's hardly any elk in this area anyway, and it's 10 o'clock. So we ended up, I'm like, well, we need to look at this elk. So my dad came, I call my dad, he comes into camp. And so I said, Dad, why don't you walk up with the hunter? I'll stay in camp and keep an eye on him and make sure he doesn't move. And this was before radios. We didn't have radios or anything. We didn't have phones out there, nothing. So he walks around with this guy, gets on top of the hill, gets above him about 400 yards, but he can't see him because he's obviously this tree's in the way. And we're glassing back and forth, and we had hand signals to say if the bull got up or not, but the bull doesn't get up. And before long, my dad comes back into camp, and I'm like, "What are you doing?" He's like, "I left the hunter up there." He's like, "He's driving. He's like, he's hacking. He's coughing. He's gonna scare that bull off. I can't deal with it anymore. You need to go up there with him." So I'm like, "Okay." So he stays in camp, and I walk back up there, and sure enough, I get up there, and he's coughing, he's rolling candy wrappers and snacks, and I'm like, there's no way this bull's gonna get up and walk towards us. If anything, this bull's gonna get up and walk away. We're being way too loud. Anyway, and I don't even know how big the bull was anyway, so I'm sitting there for about an hour and a half, and all of a sudden my dad signals that the bull's up, the bull's up. So I told him, I said, hey, get ready. This bull's, if he's right where we think he is, he's gonna come around this tree. So the bull comes around this tree, and my jaw dropped. I'm like, shoot that freaking elk. So he's, and I've never seen this bull in my life, of course. So he shoots this elk, downs it, and we walk down there, and it's a giant 7x7 that I never even seen. Saw him at a freaking camp, and we whacked this bull, and anyway, it scored 400 inches and netted
Oof.
book, and he just was crying. I mean, he just started crying when he saw how big that elk was. And I was just flabbergasted because we were so bummed out. We hadn't seen any bulls to shoot. The one bull we wanted to shoot was broken, and we come back to camp, and I saw that bull from camp, and we shot that bull. So that's one of my coolest stories that I've experienced.
That's awesome. Well, before I let you go, why don't you give us a rundown about so Travis runs Zero Guide Fees. Why don't you give us a little rundown about your business there?
Okay. So I'm an outfitter, traditional outfitter. I've been doing it 27 years in Arizona. My dad got started the company 40 years ago. We changed it from McClendon's Guide Service to Arizona Elk Outfitters, and I also own Arizona Strip Guides. So we do that traditionally, but we started 4 years ago, Zero Guide Fees, which is a third-party company. And what we wanted to do, the whole goal was to get guys to be able to get guided affordably, because guide fees are expensive. Traditional guide fees run from $6,000 to $10,000 for a week to 10 days of hunting one-on-one, and most guys can't afford that. So I just figured there has to be a better way to get guys drawn and get them booked. So we started Zero Guide Fees, and that's essentially what it is. It's no guide fees if you're a member when you get drawn. And what that means is the membership costs $350 a year for your first species, or $500 for all of them. So if you want to be covered for an all-inclusive package, that's deer, sheep, antelope, and elk, you could pay $500. And what that means is that if you become a member, let's just talk about elk since it's coming up, it's $349 a year. And when you get drawn, we'll pay for your fully outfitted hunt with Arizona Elk Outfitters or Arizona Strip Guides. Okay, so guys say, well, yeah, that's great, but it's going to be 10 years to get drawn. Well, what we do is we give you a benefit that keeps increasing the longer you're a member. So you start out with a 5-day fully outfitted hunt on day one. On your fourth year, we give you 7 days. We'll buy 7 days for you. And on year seven, we'll buy 10 days for you. So let's just talk in year seven. So if you got drawn in year seven, you put in $350 for 7 years. That's around $2,400. You're all in at $2,400. But in return, I'm giving you a 10-day fully outfitted hunt. Well, I charge $8,500 for that today. In 7 years from now, it's probably going to be 10 grand.
Right.
So you put in $2,400 over a 7-year period. I'm giving you a valued hunt at $10,000. You just saved yourself a boatload of money doing it this way. It's way more affordable. The wife doesn't get mad at you. It's recession proof. If you lose your job, a lot of guys are like, well, I'm saving up for my guided hunt. Well, what happens is, life happens and you don't have that money anymore. So paying the $350 one time a year, that is recession proof. We're going to pay for your hunt. You don't have to worry about it. And as long as you're paid up every year, we're going to give you a 5, 7, or 10-day fully outfitted hunt. So it's just a better way of doing it, because we pool all that membership money gets pooled, and then whoever gets drawn that year, that pool of money pays for their hunts. And essentially, that's how it works.
Yeah, exactly. So let me ask you this. So I do the $500 a year thing. Now, does that only apply to certain units, or is that like I can apply for any unit I want and whatever I draw, you're going to guide me?
So that's a good question. So we do filter the units based on the information you have. So residents and non-residents are different. So let me describe the non-residents real quick that are listening. It is $350 for your first, or $500 for all of them. And we do this in Arizona, Nevada, New Mexico, and Utah.
Okay.
I don't guide in the other states, so you can pick out your own outfitter and I'll pay for the hunt. Okay. So you get to choose. So get back into your question on the filtering system. So you're going to put in the species you want, the weapon you want, and how many bonus points you have for that state. When you do that, it's going to spit out a bunch of units that you're qualified for to hunt based off the species, the weapon, and your bonus points. For the trophy areas, there's never any filtering that you can't get drawn in Arizona. So I don't care if you have max points. If you have 24, 25 points, and you want to do an early rifle 9 or 10 hunt, you'll qualify for it. You'll always qualify for the hardest, the biggest trophy type hunts. Same thing with the archery. If you want to do 9, 10 as a non-resident, you're going to qualify no matter how many bonus points you have. Now, if you want to do a late rifle 10 hunt, that's going to change it up a little bit. Late rifle 10 hunt is way more tags. It's not nearly as sought after, and it's way easier to draw. So if you wanted, let's say you had 13 points as a non-resident, and you're like, you know what? I want to use this benefit in year one, and I know I'm going to get drawn with 13 points for late rifle 10 because I'm 7 points past what I needed.
Right.
That unit year one is not going to come up for you. because you have 13 points. Because really what you're telling me is you had 13 points. If you really wanted late rifle 10, you'd have drawn 7 years ago. So what that tells me is that you've been putting in for an early rifle 10 most likely, and that's why you have 13 points.
Right.
So that protects me a little bit of guys just trying to use the deal for the benefit. Exactly. Now, if you have 4 points, let's say you had 6 points and you're like, oh, I want to put in for the late rifle 10. That will come up because you have 6 points. So the system recognizes your points based on the species and the weapon and adjust it accordingly. Now, you can always change your units with us as well. So you can change from year to year, you can change your units, and we give you 2 choices. So you can change those, but we don't allow guys to downgrade. First, let me give you an example. So some guy signs up and he's doing early rifle 9, early rifle 10, and he's got 13 points. He can sign up, no problem. We're going to cover those. But let's say he gets 3 years in his membership. He's like, you know what? Forget this. I just want to hunt. So I want to do a late rifle 10 hunt. We don't allow them to downgrade right now. Mm-hmm. So you're not going to be able to downgrade to a late rifle 10 hunt so you can use your benefit. However, we are in the future thinking about letting you downgrade with an amount that you would pay towards your hunt. So it'd probably be 50% off your hunt. It allows you to hunt. You still save 50% if you wanted to downgrade in that case.
Cool.
So anyways, for residents, let me talk a little bit about residents. So residents, it's only $175, so it's half of what a non-resident pays. And the non-residents always get a fully outfitted hunt paid by us 100%. That's for non-residents. You get paid 100% of the hunt. We're going to pay 5, 7, or 10 days. Right. That's it. For a resident, it's a little different. The resident only pays $175, which is better on the membership. However, based on the same thing, species, weapon, and how many points you have will determine how much I pay towards your hunt.
Okay.
So if you're a resident with 14 points for unit 9, that's a guaranteed draw for you. You're going to owe probably $3,000 towards your $6,000 hunt. Okay? So you're still going to make out 50% off. So that's great. However, if you're a guy with 2 points mm-hmm. and you're putting in for unit 9 and you only have 2 points, I'll pay 100% of the hunt because you're a lower risk of getting drawn.
Right.
So it's based on how many points for residents. It bases on, you will have to pay some towards your hunt in some cases, depending on how many points and what kind of risk you are. And that'll tell you as you go through my program on the membership, it's going to tell you as you start filling it out, it's going to spit out the units you qualify for, and it also tell you how much I'll pay for each one of those towards your hunt. So it'll tell you unit by unit how much I'll pay towards your hunt.
Okay.
So that's the difference between the two. But either way, you know, either way, you're resident or non-resident, you're going to be saving a buco bucks. I mean, I drew five or six residents that had less than 5 points. I drew an early rifle 10 guy with 4 points, paid $175, and I paid 100% of his hunt. Just this past year, and he shot a 400-inch bull.
Nice.
And I took out a guy with 3 points, Ron Nixon, that took him out and became a member. He drew an archery strip tag. He killed a 198-inch typical beautiful buck. He paid $175, and he only had 3 points and drew the strip.
Yeah, I know. He told me about that. I actually had him on right after the show, right after he did that story. So, yeah, that's crazy.
So it does happen. Listen, for $175 for residents, I think they'd be crazy. Even if it took you 10 years to draw, it's only $1,750 all in.
Yeah.
And if you do it when you have less points, you don't pay for the hunt. I do. And that never changes. So if you signed up and I tell you I'm paying 100% of the hunt, in 10 years, I'm still paying 100% of the hunt, no matter what that hunt costs.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, cool, man. I want to thank you for coming on and sharing your knowledge with us. And, you know, those of you that go check out his website. I mean, I'm actually looking at it right now. I've been contemplating doing it myself. And I'm a guide. You know, hey, what the hell? I don't go up to the strip. So, you know, for me to go with somebody who knows it really well, as opposed to getting up there myself and spending the time and money, I might as well have some.
Well, I'll tell you, on the strip, you're going to spend $1,750 on your own, just going up there on your own. And I tell guys, even if you're out of state or if you're going to the strip, you know, even if you did it on your own coming out of state, you're in at $2,000 to $3,000. You might as well take that $2,000 or $3,000 and put it towards a membership and get fully outfitted hunt when you get drawn.
Yeah.
It's maximizing your hunt. Might as well. Listen, we run 100, 200 trail cameras on the strip. We scout it. We do all that work. That's all part of your membership. So take advantage.
Yeah, for sure.
Awesome, man. I want to thank you for coming on. And I don't know if you guys still got clients for the rest of the year in archery or anything like that. But if you do, good luck to you.
Thank you.
We'll keep in touch. I'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, guys can go to zeroguidefees.com. They just got to sign up by February 11th this year, which is the application for elk and antelope deadline. So zeroguidefees.com, get signed up, and we'll guide you this year. So thanks a lot, John, for having me on.
You're welcome. Zero guide fees, not zero outfitter fees, because that's a different guy. And
we don't talk about him.
I don't know if we like that guy.
No, we don't like copycats. We like the originators. I am the originator, so don't follow those guys.
All right, buddy. Thanks for coming on. We'll talk to you soon.
John. All right, bye.